Did you know using your browser in incognito mode doesn't actually protect your privacy? Take back your privacy with IPVanish VPN. Just one tap and all your data, passwords, communications, browsing history, and more will be instantly protected. IPVanish makes you virtually invisible online. Use IPVanish on all your devices, anytime you go online at home, and especially on public Wi-Fi. Get IPVanish now for 70% off a yearly plan with this exclusive offer at ipvanish.com/audio.
Thank you for listening to this podcast from TRE, Talk Radio Europe, your voice in Spain and around the world. For more information, please visit tre.radio.
Discuss, challenge, inform, comment, viewpoint on Talk Radio Europe.
Giles Brown.
Live comment and discussion with studio guests. Viewpoint.
It is Tuesday, the 11th of June. You're listening to Viewpoint, Talk Radio Europe's current affairs program with invited guests where we discuss the issues of the day. With you for the next 2 hours, joined in the studio by Andres Gallardo and Claudia De La Torre, who's joining us shortly. We'll be looking at a variety of issues that have been affecting Europe and Spain in particular. If you want to get involved with this morning's show, then get your viewpoint across on any of those issues with Europe seemingly moving more populist and right according to European elections, plus what's been happening in Spain. These are the numbers.
To contact TRE, please call 952-78-4000. Email studio@tre.radio. Send us a WhatsApp on +34 645 99 67 95. Message us on Facebook, Talk Radio Europe Official, or tweet us at TRE Talk Radio.
If there's something else crossing your viewpoint, we'd love to hear from you this morning. But let's take a look at the front pages of this morning's papers. The Eye hears a key pledge in the Conservative election manifesto will further cut to national insurance. Will be a further cut to national insurance. They're launching their manifesto at Silverstone, which is an interesting one. Anyway, The Guardian, so in an attempt to get what the paper calls their stricken campaign back on track. I seem to have an attack of the sneezes this morning. Anyway, The Guardian says the key stakeholders on the Tory right to give Rishi Sunak a set of demands if the manifesto falls flat. According to the Financial Times, there are concerns that Labour's refusal to rule out an increase in capital gains tax will discourage investors from putting their money into UK businesses. On the front page of the Daily Express, there are promises from the Prime Minister to slash welfare bills with another tax reduction. The Times says lower taxes and help from home buyers is an offer from the Tories. The Daily Telegraph reports on the tax relief. It reports on the tax relief that... and my machine just crashed on me, which is always good fun. Just bear with me whilst I put 30 centimes. Oh, there we go. The front page of the Express, promises from the PM to slash welfare bills with another tax reduction. Times says lower taxes will help for home buyers is on offer from the Tories. Daily Telegraph reports tax relief on offer for landlords with promises from Sunak to scrap capital gains tax for landlords who sell their property to tenants. The Mirror has an exclusive on Keir Starmer with the headline My Pledge on Kids' Health. The Sun leads with the machete murder of 19-year-old Sean Sisahi, calling the two 12-year-olds the UK's youngest killer since Jane Bulger's. The Daily Mail reports on the murder, saying family members of the victim wept as the guilty verdicts were delivered in Nottingham Crown Court. The Metro has a major NHS appeal for blood donations after a cyber attack on London hospitals led to a backlog of operations. And The Star uses its front page to launch its coverage of Euro 2024. So those headlines today, those headlines this morning, kicking off today on top of my paper pile, is this morning's papers, The Mirror, My Pledge on Kids' Health. This is a Keir Starmer exclusive. Bank, ban on energy drink sales to under 16 and junk food ads before 9 p.m. Telegraph has got a rather brilliant picture of Nigel Farage on the on the front cover. I won't join the Tories, they'll join us. But Sunak offers tax breaks to landlords. The Sun, dealing on the machete murders. Boys 12 in machete murder of Sean 19. The Times, Tories offer lower taxes and help for home buyers. Got a picture of Bill Nighy, the actor, on the front of theirs. The Guardian, Tory right plans to give Sunak set of demands if manifesto falls flat. And also, the game's afoot. Somebody's been reading their Henry V. England fly out to Germany for Euros. Picture of Jude Bellingham on the front. A Daily Mail, Wild West streets. Britain's 12-year-old machete murderers. Two boys become the youngest to be convicted of murder since the Bulger killers after horrific unprovoked attack on an innocent teenager. Daily Express, up the workers. PM promises 2 pence cut in national insurance. The I, Sunak pins hopes on NI cuts to rescue stricken Tory campaign. The Financial Times leads with Macron wager, snap elections, rattle markets. And also Labour's reluctance to rule out capital gains tax raise stokes investment fears. The Metro, hospitals, blood crisis after cyber attack, red alert, as in the blood type. And finally, the Daily Star. It's Euros week in your Daily Star. So here, as opposed to here, because it's Germany, here we go. Here we go for Euros. And those, for better or worse, are your headlines on this Tuesday, the 11th of June.
Viewpoint with Giles Brown.
Always live, always lively. Claudio De Torre is on his way in, but I'm joined in the studio by Andres Gallardo. Good morning to you, Andres.
Good morning, Giles.
Hi, I see you're responded in your tennis gear. You're either haven't recovered from the French Open, and this is what you were wearing on Sunday.
It's a bank holiday in Marbella, right. Should you know. And I'm going to enjoy a little bit of my favourite sport, which is tennis.
Yep.
And I am celebrating from our famous victory on Sunday.
Blimey.
Where we won the French Open.
Did we? I wasn't aware I was in it, but there you go.
Did you know that the last 32 editions of the French Open, 20 have been won by Spanish?
Two words, Rafa Nadal.
Well, that was 14 of them, but nevertheless, it's still a good record. No other country can say that. Very pleased about that.
Yeah, indeed. It was a fabulous. I was listening to it in the car on Sunday, and it's it was quite something. It was absolutely something. Spain was wondering where the new kid would come when Nadal stepped down.
Has arrived.
He's arrived.
Yeah,
I mean,
absolutely.
Grass now. He's got, what is it, grass?
Grass, hardcourt, and clay. So well done to him. Yeah, very proud of that. And while that was happening, we had the European elections.
Well, exactly at the same time. You could watch the tennis and vote at the same time.
Not quite. but that was an interesting day, the European elections. What was very interesting is just to get the results. It's one of the most interesting elections because you not only get the national results, but you have a look at what's happening elsewhere in Europe.
Yeah.
27 countries voting at the same time, getting the results all at the same time. And I put about, I would say, 3 highlights that I would like to comment on following the results.
There's the saying here, how the right is on the march across the continent.
That is one of the highlights, but I'm going to start with the one that is more shocking to me.
Right.
I know. Look, when you read the election results, everyone reads what they want to read.
Yeah.
Especially politicians. They all seem to have won, despite only one party that wins the overall result. But when you listen to them, they all think that they have done very, very well. But the figure that strikes me the most is the turnout. Overall in Europe, 50%. In Spain, 49%. You are looking at 1 in 2 people don't even bother to go and vote. That's a very, very low turnout. Especially when the European elections, the European Parliament decides on big policies that affect everyone across the continent. You've got policies in agriculture, fishing quotas, and industrial output, all of those things, relations with other parts of the world, trade deals and everything else. Those are big things that are decided in the European Parliament. And the engagement of people on these elections are very, very low, to the point that, surprising, Spain 49%, incredible, 50% overall in Europe. Very, very low turnout. That would be my first highlight. The second highlight would be the rise of the extreme right.
Yeah.
Especially in the two main countries in the European Union. I shouldn't say main countries because they're all...
But
the reality is that France and Germany are the two engines of the European Union. In France, you've seen what's happened. Le Pen has won the election. It's got sort of shocking results that has thrown Macron onto a snap general for the Congress, the Assembly. So big thing for a low turnout, if you know what I mean. You've got Germany, which you have, especially Eastern Germany, who've gone really to the far right. So big growth there. And Meloni winning overall. Now, the interesting thing about Meloni,
yeah,
which I said this before in this programme, when she became Prime Minister in Italy, everyone would predict that Italy is very volatile in politics anyway.
Yeah.
And they predicted that that wouldn't last very long. She has grown in confidence, and she has won the election in Italy. She's got a really good rating, a popular rating.
Yeah.
And she has shifted from anti-European, pro-Putin, hard right into a more moderate, conservative politician. Which is what I said and predicted in this program to say that would happen, because once you're in power, all the things that you're saying widely to a mass audience, you cannot act on those things because they're not possible. You've got the judiciary, you've got the European Union, you've got all of those things that put control onto wild politicians. So she's grown in confidence. Another thing that has happened on the far right, that's quite interesting. They've already split. They're split into two, pro-European and anti-European. So there is not a big consensus within the far right.
Yeah.
And that's also happened in Spain, which on Monday morning I found out that...
This is a good one.
I mean, this new party appeared.
Yeah.
They've got three members of parliament. They are to the right of Vox...
To the right of Vox. If you're any further to the right of Vox, presumably you're going to fall off the flat Earth.
You definitely will fall off the flat Earth.
Yeah.
But they've got three members of Parliament. Incredible. I didn't know, until Monday morning, I didn't know who they were.
Now,
I had to Google them.
The name of the party is pure genius.
The name of the party is... I'll say it in Spanish, se acabó la fiesta.
Right.
Which literally means the party is over, but party meaning fiesta.
Yes.
So that is the party that's emerging. They've got the same amount of members of parliament as Sumar, which are in coalition in government with Pedro Sánchez. So, bizarre. There is competition there on the far right. And finally, you've got the third highlight is that nothing has changed. Basically, the conservative vote and the Social Democrats vote in Europe still make a big majority. And all the Liberals have gone down, but they still can create the coalition that we've had for many years, where it's the only place where the Social Democrats and the Conservatives vote together in most of the things in the European Parliament. So basically, I imagine we will see von der Leyen.
Yeah.
I'm not allowed to do accents.
No, you're not.
But I've got my own. Von der Leyen will probably be elected again as a top lady in the European Union. So in real terms, nothing has changed, but we've got a snap election in France.
Yeah.
We've got resigning from the party duties of the vice president of Spain.
And the sumo, wasn't she, as well? Yeah.
Which means that the coalition of Pedro Sánchez hasn't got the strong support that he had to his left, so leaves him in a little precarious situation. We've got Meloni making advances in Italy. So all in all, for a 50% turnout, the consequences have been quite dramatic, and one in two people haven't even bothered to go and cast their vote.
Yeah, I mean, I'm just looking at having a quick Google whack this is quite interesting, this Sacabo de Fiesta. Polls more than Podemos did. Now, if that's not a thing about how politics has changed, because 20 years ago, Podemos were going to be the big thing in Spanish. These guys don't even have a manifesto. They've got a big speech where the leader, who is a gentleman called...
I don't even know his name.
Alvis Perez. Alvis Perez, who said things like, if you import Africa, you get Africa. Spain has become the party of criminals, the corrupt mercenaries, paedophiles and rapists. Papers to leave the orchard. No, there's some other. He's been in trouble before. He's on Telegram. He's been in trouble before because he spread hoaxes and speculation against the death of Alvaro Prieto, who was the Cordoba footballer who was found. Remember, he was found live when they found his body live on the report between the train tracks, which is quite horrendous.
Correct, yeah.
He spoke about a group of gypsies, quote unquote, who apparently he said had murdered him, which has turned out to be rubbish. He's been convicted on defamation. He said that the former mayor of Madrid, Manuela Carmena, had a respirator in her own house in the middle of the pandemic. He was fined 5,000 for those. And he also lost a trial against Salvador Elia, saying that he'd tested positive. There's no program on their website anyway, apart from this speech that he gave. However, there are Diego Soler and Nora Junco are the three, along with him, who've been elected to the European thing. And he's got that the mask they use in the Guy Fawkes, the Guido Fawkes mask, which is that they've nicked that for their image.
Yeah, that came from the TV series Money Heist.
Oh, Money Heist.
La Casa de Papel. I didn't know he existed, this guy and this party, because mainly social media, that's how they promote themselves. My guess, and I think he's going to be quite accurate, is the voters are going to be people that are quite young.
Yeah.
And that's the worrying thing, that the youngest, they seemed to buy more easily these populist messages where we're importing Africa and that we're going to become a Muslim country. And, they focus a lot on immigration.
Yeah.
Which has been the focus, in real terms, of the far right in the whole of Europe anyway. But he's more radical, so younger people seem to buy that populist ideas. And the result is incredible. I mean, three members of parliament. Podemos have got two.
Yeah.
Sumar, which are, as I said, in coalition with Pedro Sánchez in government. So the vice president of the government is of that group. They only got three.
A lot of people in the European elections tend to vote for, if you like, ideas for, as almost like you said, immigration is a big thing, the populism, rather than the sort of the nuts and bolts of day-to-day governance.
There's a lot of disengagement with the European Union politics, because I think, and I include myself, there's things that we don't understand of what they do, basically we're not quite sure what should be, but they are important in terms of the big things, as I said before. You look at the agricultural situation, especially the north and south divide in Europe has to be regulated, and that's what one of the things a parliament do there. You've got the fishing quotas and everything, which is also the industrial output. All of those things they are important, but we are disengaged from that because we see that a little bit too far away and out of our control. And it seems to me that the protest vote is easier to cast a protest vote on a European election than you would do in domestic elections. So if you're angry about something, you're going to sort of vent it a little bit more when it's something that maybe is not, you think is not going to affect used directly. Mm. Don't forget that years ago, the rise of Podemos was in the European election.
Yeah, yeah.
They became an actor in Spanish politics in the European election. The same happened to Vox when Vox appeared.
Yeah.
The first success, if you want to call it, was on a European election. And now we've got this guy, whoever he is, that he's had, in my view, a massive success, again on a European election. How will this translate on national elections and local elections? I don't know.
Yeah.
Because I don't think he's got any infrastructure across
the country. He's not got a manifesto at the moment.
Apart from the internet.
Exactly.
So it'll be interesting to see what happens. But the end result of this is that in practical terms, the agreement between the two big parties in Europe will keep things going as they have been for a long time.
Yeah.
What I don't understand is that why the Social Democrats and the Conservatives can get into agreement, and the Liberals as well, which I'm surprised they had a big drop in the European election. What I don't understand is why they get to agreements in the European Parliament and they cannot do it in domestic Parliament. So why PSOE and PP cannot get agreements in not everything but most things and just create a coalition in replicating other countries and the European Parliament. Why they cannot do that, I don't understand, because they certainly do it in Europe and they vote together to approve most things, and this has been a tradition. And let's not forget that despite the rise on the hard right, I think 69% of the vote have gone to
this is the thing. People are picking up on the fact that Vox got just under 10% of the vote and going, this is a major thing, but that's just 9.6% of the vote, whereas Partido Popular pick up 34%, over 34% of the vote. Fiejo, I mean, is it safe to say that he's been somewhat invisible? He's hardly making waves in a way that maybe a Rajoy did before, in terms of his profile.
He's got a similar style in terms of what in his media appearances and everything else. But I think a little bit like the Labour Party are doing with the Conservatives, they are in government, yeah. They are sinking, and they sort of step back a little bit, thinking, let them sink themselves, they don't need any help. Sanchez is lost support. In this last election, he's been losing support in all the regional elections that have taken place. Don't forget that we've voted in the last year five times in Spain. We keep voting, and Sanchez keep losing these elections. So he's got surprisingly he's gone down, but not as much as I would have predicted, and the Conservatives have gone up, but not as much as I would have predicted. So, but the tendency is for the Popular Party to go, they're going up, and the Socialist Party is going down. The problem that Sanchez has got is the coalition parties are going down big time. Podemos, Sumar, all of these left-wing parties are losing a lot of support, and that sustains Sanchez in power. So without their support, is going to have a big problem. We don't have a budget for this year because he cannot get it approved in Parliament. Since July, there's only two laws have been approved in the Spanish Parliament, only two in nearly a year. And one of them was the amnesty for a group of politicians.
We'll have a look at that as well.
I don't know what legs that's got because, yeah. I mean, in my humble view, you cannot legislate for just a group of people. You have to legislate for everybody. So I think the Constitutional Tribunal have something to say to that. But that's the only thing that he's managed to get through Parliament. Do we want another 3 years of stagnation without a budget? And don't forget... sorry, I'm going on a bit.
It's all right. Going on a bit is fine. Trust me on this show.
The budget. I mean, yes, you can... renew the budget that has been approved the year before, but things have changed a lot since then.
Yeah.
Because we had inflation, so the figures have to be reviewed in terms of the inflation. We have a commitment to NATO and on spending on defence. So that has to be shown in a new budget approved by Parliament. So there's a lot of things that are needed with a new budget that he cannot get through Parliament. So what's the solution? I mean, very easy to say. Do we want another election? I don't want another election.
Nobody wants another election.
Nobody wants another election, but I cannot see progress when we have a parliament that cannot approve anything.
Here's the thing, though. So you're saying that Sanchez hasn't been having, you know, he hasn't, his policies aren't going through. Is this perhaps then the reason that he is taking such an aggressive stance or a high profile stance with the flight, you know, the recognition of Palestine, the joining states? Only yesterday he's trying to get Spain involved with the joining South Africa in the case against the invasion of Gaza, what's happening over there. He's playing the international, I don't want to get sucked into the rights and wrongs or whatever, but is he playing that international card? Because it's much easier to play international statesmen than it is to deal with these bothersome people at home.
Yeah, he is. He's gone onto the international arena because it's a safe message, if you like.
Yeah.
He is appeasing the left wing voters who seem to be more pro Palestinians, and then recognizing the state of Palestine is a useless bit of anything. You know, there is no state to recognize, there's no state. The two-state solution, although a lot of people favor it, is completely impractical, and history has told us that, you know, how impractical it is when one side wants to eliminate the other, and that is Hamas. And geographically, you've got the West Bank and you've got Gaza. So to recognize the state and the capital in East Jerusalem, I mean, to recognize that internationally, I mean, he doesn't do anything, but he tries to get support from left-wing parties who are, for some bizarre reason that I still don't understand, people who support the Palestinian cause. And I think he's taken that route. But you've got the relationship with Morocco as well, which is and Argel as well, which have been blunders of his international actions. He has, of course, upset Israel. He's going to upset, if Trump wins the elections, we're going to fall out with Trump as well, because that is what his basis will expect him to do, and is just sailing that way, as opposed to be dealing with things that they need to be dealt here with the situation that we find. Bizarrely enough, and I said this before in this program, Spain is on a growing economically at a, I was going to say a good rate. It's not a good rate. Anything below 2.5% is not a good rate. But they're generating employment and everything else. But below all that, we have precarious employment that is being created. We've got inflation still hurting a lot of families. And we've got one big problem with habitation. Young people cannot access property.
Yeah, yeah. We're seeing more and more of those. We're seeing more demonstrations about that, about social housing and the fact of accommodation.
Well, if you look at the protest of the tourists in places like Mallorca, the Canaries, and other areas, yeah. It was ignited by the problem that they've got in those areas to access property. I mean, if I was going to say, if you're a nurse in Ibiza with a salary of a nurse, but I can tell you, even if you're a doctor in Ibiza, you are going to struggle to find somewhere decent to live. And that is something that I'm naturally anti you know, intervention and legislation and that kind of thing. But in Spain, because of the increase in tourism rates, which is something that you could say is a success, It's created a problem in the housing market.
Well, it's created a problem in the housing market because people are now doing what seemed like a very, and I've spoken to Simon, Sean Tipton, Abter about this a couple of times because it's been reported in the British press, is because of what seemed like a great idea 10 years ago, Airbnb will rent out a spare room for people coming on holiday. That's great, get away from that old hotel thing. Has now turned into a bleeding hydra because what you're seeing is our people are speculating in terms of buying stuff, and you are seeing, obviously, it's, you know, follow the money, but there have been these horror stories of, you know, Spain has had a long tradition, like France has, and you go to Paris, for example. People mainly used to rent long-term, you know, for 40 years or so. And now, of course, you know, all those buildings in, you know, Madrid, Consejeros, et cetera, and the old-style buildings. And now you're seeing these stories about, you know, little old ladies of 82 or 85 being kicked out of the apartment they've rented since the 50s or 60s because the apartment owner suddenly realised, hey, I can flip this on Airbnb and get in a weekend. And also, I was speaking to a very good Spanish friends, good morning, Chris. The other morning, and he's saying they're talking about doctors and nurses. He's talking about doctors and nurses in Mallorca, Ibiza, saying they're having to literally live on sofas in tents and, you know, get showers in the gym.
Caravans,
yeah.
We're talking people who are decently paid.
Yeah.
We're not talking, you know. As I said before, I'm anti-regulation, but the. But what is clear is in areas like the big cities and the coastal areas and the islands, the holiday rental has to be regulated.
Mm.
Because just look around us. If you put, if there was demand to put all the people in the amount of property we've got here, it would be impossible to live, and this is what's happening. Is the holiday rental of residential apartments have increased the capacity and the capacity of people visiting that cannot be absorbed by the infrastructures that we've got in place.
You've just mentioned my favourite word, infrastructure. I will stand on my soapbox and start singing the International Eye now, because you cannot have unparalleled construction or development without also having a system put in that provides enough water or enough transport. And I know that we're talking Costa del Sol, we need a train link, we wouldn't believe, but also social housing, because otherwise, if you're opening a six-star restaurant coming over from Dubai and you can't get the waiters to be trained to do it, then, you know, you're going to kill what makes a place special. And also, if you cannot drive from your luxury three bedroom apartment, whatever, to the nearest Chichi beach club, 180 euros for a beach bed or whatever, and therein lies another story, then you're going to move somewhere else, like Dubai. And if you can't get a meal in a Chiringuito because they've all become Chichi beach clubs with saxophone players and, you know, 20 euros for a clubs to get the first gazpacho. I mean, off
quite,
we go.
It's quite funny. I was talking to a colleague of mine that she was looking for her birthday to enjoy a beach day in one of these Chichi beach clubs that you call them.
Yeah.
And she came to me and she said, I can't find anything for less than 100 euros for the sunbed. And so you know, so on.
And
Sunday,
even if you are in a beach club, you're going to get raided by the police because they're doing an operation Marbella. Anyway, go on.
The funny turn out was that on Sunday she was called to be on the electoral table.
Okay.
She was very happy because she got 70 euros. So she sent me a WhatsApp saying, oh, they just paid me 70 euros. And that can't even get you a sunbed in Marbella. this is how crazy it is. So,
right. On the thought of all things, so I'm just going to take a quick break and then back with my viewpoint.
Viewpoint with Giles Brown.
Always live, always lively. Delighted to say that we've been joined in magnificent summer garb, because Andres is ready for the tennis court, centre court, Roland Garros, and you, Claudio, are ready for the beach, presumably.
Indeed.
Good morning to you. How are you doing?
Good morning. I'm great.
So, your take, because we were starting to ramble off, go off on a spin off on a tangent about the price of beach beds, but your take on the what we've seen in the European elections, what it means for the left, for the centre, and for the right. But first of all, we go live to the lines for a call. Morning, caller, you're live on TRE. What's your name? Where are you calling from? What's your viewpoint, please?
Good morning, Giles. It's Alf.
Morning, Alf.
And Andreas. And at long last, good morning, Claudio.
Good morning, good morning.
I was just going to try and give Andreas a bit of a break, that's all. But no, two or three serious things.
Right.
Firstly, the European elections, you was complaining about the turnout. My prediction is it will go much less than this. There's still some enthusiasm from the new countries joining, because for some of them it's probably only their first real chance to have a vote, and they think, and I know from friends in their countries, they're told, you know, the more you it's a bit like getting everybody to go on the padron, the more people on the padron, the more money you'll get from regional government. Similar applies in the European Union. A lot of these countries are saying the more people we get to participate in European elections, the more money we'll be able to get out of the EU. So there's a bit of enthusiasm, which is why it's so high, but it doesn't amaze me. We're down to 70% turnouts in general elections. You know, 30%, a third of the population really couldn't give a toss about what goes on. In local elections in the UK, I can't talk about them here, although I do vote here. I've never really looked at the turnout. But turnout in local elections in the UK, I once covered an area of Greenwich, and the turnout was 19%. And it's not unusual. It's a trend. And it's because people are getting less enamoured with politics, and you were right, Andreas, with, you know, some of the analysis of what happened in the European elections. I'm not disagreeing with any of that, and why it's swinging to the right. It's because the right, being oppositionists, being populists, can get more people to vote for them, because that's all they are, populist and anti, and people love voting anti, and they love voting for the winners. So it doesn't surprise me, and my prediction is that the European elections will get less and less and less, especially as, you know, places like France and Germany, the strength of what was the EU, even with Britain in there, it was always, you know, participation in all sorts of things. But I can see that if they're drifting, so will their turnout. So that's on the European elections. So, one, it didn't surprise me, the turnout. Two, it did surprise me how right-wing they went. And I was even more surprised, Andreas, because somebody said to me, oh, have you seen what Vox has done in the European elections? And according to you, he's like, not as good as this other mob that have come along who've won three seats who are to the right of Vox.
Exactly.
Genghis Khan party.
Well, yes. Yeah,
and the other thing as well that affects a lot, and people don't quite understand this thing, because everybody's concentrating on what's happening in Mallorca and the islands. But here in Malaga, there was a big wave of not anti-tourists, but all these people, the anti-going to Airbnb, exactly what Giles said. The Airbnb people are booking out, people who've worked in restaurants for 20, 25 years, all of a sudden being told, you can't stay in this apartment anymore, I want it back, and they're doing Airbnb, etc.
Yeah.
And these people are having to be pushed out, and it surprised me, because I take no notice of house prices, because the house I live in is only worth the value of me living here. You know, unless I'm going to sell it and give my money away, it's of no value, it's just a house that I live in. But the people up the road were telling me, now, two doors from me, they sold their house 2 years ago for €230,000, which was probably a bit on the low side, but only just, so €250,000, say. They've just had a quote for their house, which is next door, €450,000 starting price. And you go, no wonder the bleeding Spanish can't afford anything, but next door, and if people know roughly where I live, I live next door to the new Hikaron town. I'll call it a town because it's massive, enormous. I've never seen so many apartments going up so quickly over the last 4 or 5 years, they are everywhere. Hundreds of thousands of, and like you said, Giles, I'm not sure about the infrastructure going in with it. Yeah, they put sewage pipes in, they put water pipes in. We've got no bleeding water. There's limited car parking spaces. Every one of these apartments is selling for over €500,000. So these are not apartments, affordable housing for local people. And there are all these ones, you know, the beach club. Yeah, we've got 4 beach clubs now. When we came here, we had a beach. Now we've got 4 beach clubs, and it's pricing everybody out of the system, completely out of the system. But you go, oh, somebody's got to control you. Go, yeah, okay. So there's a dispute between Benel Madner and Fuengirola as to as
this is where central government surely has to step in, then, isn't it?
Well, it's not central government; it's local government. Well, yeah, local government give the licenses.
Regional, the hunter, then.
The ones that control the housing market.
Yeah, but that's the overall plan. But when it comes to the individual, listen, I live in a block of 11 houses. And I'm not saying it's corrupt, but when they were planned, there was only supposed to be 10 houses here. And the developer decided to build 11 houses, and nobody stopped them. Nobody said to them. We had a dispute here, and the solution from our urbanisation was, which one of you 11 houses is going to be knocked down in order to comply with the law? So it's the absolute arrant planning nonsense at the beginning. So nobody is controlling that, and everybody knows that the licenses given by the local authorities puts money into the local authorities. Why all of a sudden has Fuengirola become really, really rich? That they can spend money on new sports stadiums for kids and new swimming pools and new this and new that. Well, it's because they're getting all this money from these apartments. And I tell you, in the summer, when these apartments are all fully sold, and they're going up so fast, they're sold before they're built. So this isn't some pipe dream of in 5 years' time this is all going to happen. They can't build the buildings fast enough, and they're nearly all, I don't say all of them, but nearly all Scandinavians, because they haven't been affected by the European bank. So, you know, a lot of them got their own currencies and things like that. So this, you cannot, you know, if you ever get a chance, just drive up to Hickeron. There's a big restaurant, sit in the restaurant and just look down the hill, and it's all white now. It used to be all green. Now it's all white. And and that's uncontrolled planning, completely uncontrolled. And the only thing that's controlling all of that is money. Nothing else. You've got the money, you can buy your apartment, the developer will sell it to you, the developer puts whatever money into the local authority, however it goes into the local authority. The local authorities are happy because they can then keep what I call the indigenous people, the people that have lived in Fuengirola and Benel Madner for 40, 50 years, they can keep them happy because they're giving them their little sweeties, you know, tarmacked roads and new, like I say, new sports centres, new swimming pools, promoting local sports, MIAS as well. You just see it's transforming, but it's because it's not controlled by anybody. You know, the only thing that's controlling it is money. So, Andreas, thank you for your opening bit. I enjoyed it.
Thanks very much for the call in there, Alf. If you want to get involved with today's show, then these are the numbers.
To contact TRE, please call 952-78-4000. Email studio@tre.radio. Send us a WhatsApp on +34 645 99 67 95. Message us on Facebook, Talk Radio Europe Official, or tweet us at TRE Talk Radio.
So, Alf called in. I was just welcoming Andrea, Claudia De La Torre into the show. We've got 5 minutes before we hit the first half of Viewpoint. But just get your spin on what the European elections are meaning for the left, for the centrist parties. I mean, looking at the Ross Clark today in the Mail, he said it's delivered a stinging rebuke to the bloc's centrist and left-wing politicians. Elections in the 720-member European Parliament have seen hard-right parties triumph. with voters expressing frustration with against mass immigration. We've seen Vox getting 9.4% of the 9.6% of the vote here. I mean, we've seen this party, the Fiesta Sacabo, taking, which is quite an interesting one, to put it mildly. Do you think this is a vote of Spain wanting to be more populist, or do you think that we are to this general dissatisfaction with what Sanchez has been doing thus far?
Well, it's very interesting in the whole of the European Union, because let's say in the founding members like Italy and Germany, the traditional parties have taken a beating. And it's after many years of discontent. There's just a huge amount of discontent. Plus, the European Union, after Brexit, has taken no major reforms, or they haven't listened to anyone's worries. So they've just kept business as usual, when you would have think maybe after what happened in Brexit, they would have thought, well, it's okay to... It would be time to make a reform of the political system for people to feel more... included in the European project or whatever, but Europe has just basically not taken any changes. The cost of living crisis is a huge thing. Inequality is growing. Illegal immigration is causing problems in many different areas. So I think it's just the general dissatisfaction, and the traditional left and right parties have on the whole, the European People's Party has gone up. So we could say, like, the ones who have taken the biggest beating would be the European Socialists. Although the pro-European bloc is still obviously a majority, over 60%. So we could say that they have resisted the pro... So there's not a Eurosceptic majority, although it is growing. And then, of course, it depends on who you talk, because some people, for example, in Italy, Fratelli d'Italia, Meloni's party, have won. However... some are not considering her in the Eurosceptic bloc, because they're set. She has quite a pro-European agenda and Ukraine and this, and she's on a kind of her. At the end of the day, her agenda isn't that different from the European People's Party, or which she is in coalition with in Italy. So people are debating whether. What do you call Eurosceptic now, once Britain has left the EU? Because at the moment, there isn't another strong party that's saying that they want to have a referendum on leaving the EU. That's off the cards at the moment. That hasn't been talked about. So definitely in Spain, it's been interesting, because let's say the far right has grown a lot less than it has in, for example, in Germany, where they're second place, in France, where they're first place, where, of course, Macron has been had a huge, not surprise, because I think he knew what was coming, but an awakening, or whatever you want to call it, calling the legislative elections on the night of the election. So that hadn't been done for a very long time. So I'd say Macron is probably we could say one of the biggest victims of the election.
Yeah, but there is a thing now that he's called a snap election, and we'll come on to this maybe in the second hour as well, so we'll leave him with a little cliffhanger. But this may be a thing against the national rally, the French party, to say, okay, you guys, you've been sitting there sniping from like a teenager in his bedroom complaining, so therefore you have a go. And then when it comes to calling this national election, that now guarantees it could have a centrist government in power in France for the next decade, basically, depending on how it goes.
Possibly, yes. It is, one has to not forget, it is a legislative election. It's not a presidential election. So Macron isn't leaving anytime soon, as some people thought that it was a presidential election. So that just means parliament is dissolved and they'll choose new deputies. So either Macron will have a smaller representation and have to give in more, or more. We'll see what happens.
We'll see what happens. We're going to the news at the top of the hour and then back with more Viewpoints.
Talk Radio Europe.
Your voice in Spain.
Discuss, challenge, inform, comment, Viewpoint on Talk Radio Europe.
Giles Brown.
Live comment and discussion with studio guests.
Viewpoint.
And welcome back to second half of Viewpoint with me, Giles Brown, joined in the studio by Claudia de la Torre and Andres Gallardo, with you for the next 50 minutes or so. If you want to get involved with today's show, any thoughts about the European elections or anything else crossing your radar, you want to get your viewpoint across, these are the numbers.
To contact TRE, please call 952-78-4000. Email studio at tre.radio. Send us a WhatsApp on +34 645 99 67 95. Message us on Facebook, Talk Radio Europe Official, or tweet us at TRE Talk Radio.
And we're looking at the European elections, what it means. Several saying that it's been a political earthquake across the EU, how the right is on the march across the continent. Stephen Ritson, of course, will have his own thoughts on this one as well. He's following me at 12 o'clock. Looking at some of the national parties, though, they got the National Rally in France, which gained 31% of the vote. It was known as the Front National until 2018, but was rebranded by Marine Le Pen. Of course, those of you who know your French politics will know that her father was Jean-Marie Le Pen. As a bid to distance itself from long-standing associations with fascism and anti-Semitism. Founded in 72 by Jean-Marie Le Pen, who wants drastic curbs on immigration and reform on the European Union. Marine Le Pen expelled her father from the party after he belittled the Holocaust as a detail of the Second World War, but faced controversy herself in 2017 when she said that France wasn't responsible for the rounding up of 13,000 Jews in Paris. Said that the Vichy regime was not France. So that is that alternative. Of course, the AfD party in Germany, hard right, 15.9% of the vote. This include claims it supported plans to deport millions of people with non-German ethnic backgrounds, including those who currently have German citizenship. Anti-immigration Eurosceptic denied it, so supported so-called remigration. Looking at AfD said yesterday that its candidate Maximilian Krah would not be part of its delegation to the European Parliament after he told the Italian newspaper that members of the Nazi SS were not necessarily criminals. Meanwhile, last month a new leading AfD figure, Bjorn Höck, was fined €13,000 for using a Nazi slogan. Meanwhile, Freedom Party, of course, in the Netherlands, which is well-known anti-Islam populist. This is Geert Wilders' Freedom Party. They won 17.7% of the votes across there, and he's called for to have the Quran banned in the Netherlands. It's now been scrapped. And Poland. Confederation in Poland won 12.1% of the vote. That is a right-wing Polish party. Obviously, as we would expect, Hungary, Viktor Orban, managed to pick up 45% of the vote over in Hungary. He's long been a thorn in the side of the EU. Austria as well. They're the Populist Freedom Party there. Won 25.7% of the vote. As I said before, the Freedom Party is expected to win Austria's general election. It's interesting indeed. Do you think, Claudia, there's a move to more populism across the European Union? People are saying we're fed up with politicians. They're all the bleeding same. They all lie and they cheat and they're off to themselves. They're feathering their nests and we're going for something different.
I think, especially as in many countries in the EU, the same parties have been ruling for over 50 years, in some countries even longer. So, why not give the opportunity to other parties? Let's see how they're going to do it. there's no fidelity anymore in voting like there was before. That before, if you were for one party, you kind of stuck for them forever kind of thing. So now people don't mind voting whoever, and they might even, especially the young, each election they'll vote a different party. Also, I think that there's many issues that haven't been addressed, and that they've tried to, and like both the traditional left and traditional right have had a similar approach on, especially in they have been certain countries in northern and certain parts of Europe where there is problems with illegal immigration and law and order, so people feel that they haven't been listened to. So they want solutions. It doesn't mean that these people that have voted these parties are far right or fascist or anything. They're just people that are concerned, let's say, with the situation, and that these parties have said that they're going to do something about. So they say, let's give them a go, especially in certain countries where there's often discontent or riots, or there's like in France and Belgium and Germany. So definitely I think the EU really does need to change radically, because if they don't change radically, more and more people are going to feel disconnected. The fact that more than 50% of the people don't vote in these elections already says a lot. In some countries, it even raises to 70% abstention, or even 80% in some small European countries. So that means that there's only a tiny minority, there's a small minority who are actually voting. So definitely Brexit was a wake-up call. There wasn't really any change in the EU. There wasn't any... So I think that, yes, let's see what happens now, whether I think also as people see that, for example, the European Popular Party, which is the majority party at the moment, they've raised their seats, and the socialists have faced the biggest losses. But traditionally, those two parties are united in Europe because they don't want to
Let's look at the reality here, because we're playing in the hands of the media here, which they have made a big fuss of the rise on the far right. But the end result of the election is that nothing has changed. I said that before. The two main parties, which they seem to cohabit very gladly in the European Parliament, they've still got a vast majority. And if you add the Liberals into that, they're very, very comfortable. So the reality is the European Union... I mean, you said just now that the wake-up call of Brexit would have been the trigger to change, but nothing has changed. And in this last election, where perhaps there was the opportunity to make some changes to the European Union, it hasn't happened. So everybody seems to be happy with the status quo here of the European Union. But the media are making a big fuss of the far right. We're playing into their hands because the far right has grabbed all the headlines. But the end result is the far right are not going to be influential enough to change anything. Not only that, they're split into two groups. So the same people, they've got the pro-European and the anti-European. And look what's happened with the fringe parties. During the big recession in 2010, when we had Podemos had a massive rise that started with the European election, funnily enough, had a massive rise. At one point, we thought that in Spain they would overtake
the new dawn, getting rid of the old parties, etc. And you had Ciudadanos as well, of course, which was...
Ciudadanos, as soon as they touched power, they disappeared. Podemos, as soon as they touched power, they're just about to disappear, because once they enter into the coalition government and the ministers were appointed by Pedro Sánchez to sustain his government, they were useless. They were like... the laws that they were passing, they were flawed. Not that long ago, if you remember, they had rapists being let off the jails because of a flawed law that these guys did. So they, as soon as they touch power, they start to disappear. And the only exception you have in the far right, which I am surprised, but I predicted it, is Meloni in Italy.
Well, of course, all. But they've moved. She got away from the Lombardy League and the Northern League.
But she's
and moved.
Changed her tune from her early days.
Yeah.
If you listen to what she was saying when she was campaigning to what she's doing now, it's a different thing. And she's become anti-Putin, pro-European, pro-Ukraine, and everything else, where before she wasn't. So she had, because she touched power, and to maintain the power and the popularity, she had to change her rhetoric to a more conventional rhetoric. Otherwise, she would be voted out.
But this is this. You can argue this is why Macron's. As I said before, this is why Macron is pulling this election, because he is saying to the far right or the national, you know, the Marine Le Pen's party. Okay, you know, you have a go then. If you want to get some power,
exactly.
You know, you see how you like it, as the saying goes. I mean, you've got this guy, this Jordan Bardella, who is the poster boy, the pin-up boy for the far right or for the right, and this, you know, it's all very well to sit there and snipe, but you have to say, okay, well, you know, come and have a go if you think you're hard enough in football parlance, and see how you get on with it.
But I think this is a strategy. I'm not joking. I think that Macron has said, okay, you have a go and see how you get on with passing the laws that you're proposing. You won't be able to do it. Look how difficult it is to get a plane from England to Rwanda, and all the tripping situations they found with the judiciary and everything else. All these populist ideas, they might be popular when you listen to them and said, oh, great, yeah, that's a great idea, let's do it. But let's look at the reality of it, or you can or cannot do, because some of the things that Le Pen is proposing, they won't be able to get it through, especially through the judiciary. So Macron is thinking, okay, you have a go, see how you get on. And that is very damaging for people who vote for a party that they got there and they are all, you know, excited about the new dawn arriving, and it doesn't happen, is when they get deflated. I've seen it with Podemos, and I think that is the same is going to happen with Vox and our new guy, I can't remember his name. As soon as they touch power and people realise they cannot do what they're saying they will do, they will deflate, and it'll go back to traditional politics with people who are a little bit more prepared to be able to pass laws and to do like a professional job, because these guys, they arrive in politics and they're Muppets, and it shows their colours when they actually have to do the job.
We've got a caller on the line. I just vote for Fozzie Bear. Right then, morning caller, you're live on TRE. What's your name? He's a Muppet. What's your name? Where are you calling from? What's your viewpoint, please?
Hello, it's Gil from Carlton.
Morning, Gil.
Yeah, I've been listening this morning, and I agree with a lot that has been said. I'd like to speak in terms of somebody who supports the populist movement.
Right.
Right. I think, lots of things will be very difficult to change, but the populists might get some influence on this green deal that they're trying to impose on the farmers. Some of it might be curtailed, but of course, the most difficult question is immigration. And one of the speakers said that it'd be very difficult to get it past the judiciary. Lots of these things are very, very complicated. But in my opinion, if they don't solve the problem of the immigration, there could be a civil war in Europe. I mean, there could be a new Hitler coming up, you know. I mean, it's such a terrible problem, you know, that we cannot control our borders, you know. It's just, and it's completely unbelievable. Now, I want to say that the populists have an ideology. First, populism is not just in Europe, it's also in other parts of the world, like in South America. You've got Bolsonaro, who's no longer in office. You've got Milei in Argentina. You even have Trump in the States. So it is more than European. But they have many things which are common. For instance, they all agree on, you know, back to the importance of the nation state, tradition, culture, religion, and so on, yeah? They also are against globalization and global institutions. I mean, and we can see that. I mean, many are against the European Union and the fact that it hasn't been modernized. But many realize that it's not so simple after Brexit. Nowadays, the people don't want to just leave the bus. They want to be driving the bus. So there's an anti-global institutions. I mean, that's, you know, like the WTO and the UN. I mean, they're all non-functioning, in my opinion. I'd just get rid of all of them and start again from scratch. There are also other things that are common, like, anti-Islam and the change of the population, this replacement theory, which is no longer a theory, it's a fact.
It's a fact, yeah? This is the great replacement, yeah, okay.
Yes. The population is replacing. I mean, look at France. I mean, it's 10% Muslim, and it will be growing because not only their birth rate is high, but, you know, when a Muslim Arab wants to get married, you know, there are plenty of beautiful French girls, Muslim girls as well, in France to choose from, but they tend to go to Morocco, Algeria, get married there and bring the wife along. So the population is increasing there very, very fast, and many white people, or I would say Christian, Jewish, and so far, are leaving the country because the country is just not recognizable anymore.
Right.
So this replacement is happening all over, and people are very sad about it, and it's got lots of implications to the culture and the way people think, and yeah, but the minute somebody talks against it, you're a racist, you're a bigot, and of course, if you're in Germany, you're a Nazi as well, yeah? So it's very difficult to address this issue. There are also other things which are common, for instance, climate, which became nothing to do with left and right. Nowadays, it's the ideology of the left, and many, although not all, of the populists are climate skeptics, like myself. Other things which are common, they all have a much more positive attitude towards Russia. I think with the exception of Meloni in Italy and Poland, most of them are not so enthusiastic about helping Ukraine and would like to push for a ceasefire. Another thing that is common to all the populists is they're all pro-Israel. I cannot think of any contrary example there. And that has, you know, lots of reasons behind it. Part of it is the anti-Semitism from the left, and part of it is to do with a revival of Christianity and the attitude of Christianity to Israel and to the Jews and so on. So the populists have lots of themes which are in common, okay? So it's becoming an ideology, you know, which is very, very well-defined and something that people can focus on.
It's interesting views there, Gil. Indeed, Andres.
The only thing I have to say to Gil is that I don't think I made myself clear. Nothing has changed in the European Union, despite the rise on the far right. Sorry, If they wanted to be useful, the far right, in my opinion, they should be pushing for things. Look, the tax on CO2 emissions. Yeah. I don't know if they're measuring kilograms or what's the kind of measure, but if you compare it to Europe, it's 70 euros per kilogram of emissions in tax. Yeah. In America, it's $30. Yeah. In China, 10. Yeah. The reason behind of this tax is ultimately to save the planet. But you cannot save the planet by just taxing Europeans on their emissions, and other parts of the globe don't have the same policy, because what, you know, the sea rising levels, they're not going to stop in the coast of France because they're doing, you know, their bit. They're going to raise everywhere. So if they want to do something, they should be putting pressures on things they are doable. You can't just say, I'm going to throw every single Moroccan out of France and send them back, because you won't be able to do that. Let's try to focus on what can be done, and not on just grabbing votes from populist ideas.
Okay, as for the tax on carbon, I'm a former scientist myself, and I know many of the scientists who've worked on this and have published books on this. And in my opinion, the CO2 has no effect on the environment, no effect on the sea level, no effect on the temperature. It's all baloney. You know, and I couldn't put it in any better way. I mean, you know, scientists who've looked at it very, very seriously say the whole thing is politicized. It is well known since for about 100 years that the CO2 has very, very little effect, despite the fact that it's a greenhouse effect. I just don't believe in it. I think we have to scrap this thing altogether, okay? But at least maybe the populace will try and reduce it. I don't know. As for throwing the Moroccans out of France, or, I mean, I don't think in France is that suggestion, but certainly there is that suggestion in the Netherlands, because Geert Wilders said it quite often. I think it is, the problem is with people who are very extreme Muslims, you know, people who support terrorists, people who are behind some of these extremists in the recent demonstrations for Gaza, which was supposed to be demonstrations for Gaza, but there was a lot more to it, you know. Some of these people who are inciting violence, and I think that even if they are citizens, like in the case of AfD in Germany, you know, they will say even if they're citizens, they should be deported. I mean, some of these Muslims are so extreme, yeah, something has to be done about it. I mean, I heard an interview in English from the Qatari foreign minister said that the Europeans are just so naive. They have no idea of what is going on in the Islamic world, because this is the problem in the Islamic world, and the leaders in Islamic and Arab countries are aware of it and doing something against these extremists. Yeah, you don't have to, you know, deport a whole group of the population, but there are many people that definitely it's worthwhile making an effort to deport.
Okay, well, Gil, thank you for your call in there. As always, good to hear from you. Going to go to a break and then back with more Viewpoints.
Viewpoint with Giles Brown.
Always live, always lively, this show being no exception. Joined by Claudia De Torre and Andres Gallardo. If you want to get involved,
to contact TRE, please call 952-78-4000. Email studio@tre.radio. Send us a WhatsApp on +34 645 99 67 95. Message us on Facebook, Talk Radio Europe Official, or tweet us at TRE Talk Radio.
Now we've got quite a few WhatsApps in, which is +34 645 99 67 95. Good morning to Vanessa. It says, hi, read the expensive sunbeds. You see, we're dealing with the issues that matter to the listeners, the expensive sunbeds. There will always be expensive places and cheaper alternatives. That is seen everywhere. Instead of Marbella, Puerto Banús, look at Cancelada, etc. Okay, tourists are aware that Marbella is the higher end and therefore more expensive, just like Dubai. I can have my own rant about the Dubaiification of Marbella, but that's for another show. Also, note that, and here we go, and this is a broad church, the same email it says, we go from beach beds to Hamas. So, yes, indeed. Also, note that Hamas is anti-Zionist rather than anti-Jewish. 1988 versus 2017 Hamas covenant. True, they want Palestinians to regain their stolen land. Agree that after 146-plus countries recognizing a Palestine state, Spain's effort is not much more than a noble gesture. Thank you for that. Meanwhile, hi, Giles. As you wind down on the politic topic, wind down? Can you chat briefly on the state of Spanish towns with so much graffiti and dog poo appearing from away from bins and rubbish? It's mostly the first thing the tourist sees when they arrive. What else can we do to improve on that? Get councils to make a campaign to keep it all cleaner. They never had to keep Britain tidy or its equivalent in Spain in the 70s. It's all going downhill fast. Radio and TV need to do adverts to encourage more cleanups ASAP. Any thoughts from your panel? Well, hang on. And meanwhile, apparently, and this is from Gary, who is presumably like Patton's Third Army cutting a swathe across Europe. Apparently, the citizens here in Pamplona say, don't feed trolls. So there you go.
If you have a troll going clip, clip, clip under your bridge, then let us know. 952-784-4000. The panel, Gary, once again, you've made the panel look more mystified than normal when they were in front of me. Andres?
Yeah, no, for the WhatsApp referring yes. to the dog poo and all
yes, that. Yes, yes. Joe was talking about poo yesterday. It's become a very poo-centric station all of a sudden, this station. Some might argue it's been full of that since it began, but anyway, off you go.
Look, it's an element... All of the councils in Spain, every single one of them, they have their regulation where you can be heavily fined if your dog poos in the street and you don't pick it up.
Indeed.
But you cannot have...
Poo, not the dog, obviously.
The owner. So there are regulations. It's a matter of civility, because you can't have a local policeman behind every dog owner in every single town.
It would solve an employment and security crisis in one move, Andres. Yes.
Well, basically, what has to be is a civility issue where people should have the responsibility of owning a dog and doing what needs to be done.
Should we go live to the lines?
Of course.
Thank you very much. 952-784-4000. Morning, caller. You're live on TRE. What's your name? Where are you calling from? What's your view? Point, please.
Morning, everybody. It's Sharon, Alicante.
Good morning, Sharon.
I'm glad I'm living in Alicante. I don't think I'm better than everybody else, as they tend to do down in Malaga. it's a much nicer part of the country.
Oh, let's not start that one, Sharon. But anyway,
you even said yourself a few minutes ago, somebody implied that they're better than everybody else. I just think it's ridiculous. So anyway, yes. my point is oh God, what we were talking about. The Gill's call. I don't mind. I tend to agree with your studio guests that things are not that different, that we are still a centrist Europe, because I am considered myself to be a European, not a Brit alone, a Brit that would like to be in Europe. And I think they're correct, but we do have to be careful, because yesterday we've just had D-Day. My father was involved in that. My grandfather was in the First World War. It's probably not so relevant to your guests because they had the Civil War here. But we have to watch what these people are doing, because somebody yesterday from Reform stated that we should have done a deal with Hitler.
Oh yes.
And he apologised for it, and I found it very offensive. So, Gil, if you're a populist fan, think about what some of these people are saying, the dangerous rhetoric that they're throwing at people. Nothing's been made of it, which is annoying me, because to me that was...
I mean, there's a certain made out, because it's obviously appeared in the press today, and we're seeing that as well, because he's having to backtrack. I mean, it's even in the Mail, for goodness sake. So, I mean, he's having to backtrack on that one, because he's saying, you know, we should have stayed neutral. But then again, you can argue that Halifax, etc., was warning against that in the war, if you want to get historical. But I know what you're saying in that. It was extremely, extremely badly timed to put it. Here we go. Reform candidate said Britain would have been better not fighting Hitler. This is Ian Gribbin, who says that he also attacked the abysmal wartime leadership of Winston Churchill in the series of online comments. Interesting one, huh?
Yeah, I mean, I'll let you speak, but I think we have to be careful, very careful, with some of these people on the far right. Thank you.
Thank you, Sharon, and lovely to hear from you, and I'm sure that Alicante is applauding us. You're a better place than the rest of us.
It's wonderful, and it's actually raining now.
Well, there you go. You see, it's fertile too, because you're getting the rain that we so need on these parched badlands of the south. Thank you very much for your call.
That's right. Much better than that.
Yeah,
thank you,
Sharon. Yes,
it's very tempting for some people, especially populist, whether they're from the right or from the left, to try to rewrite history, and that's a very dangerous thing, because history, you cannot change what happened, and it's there for us to have a reference of what we should and shouldn't do, and we have to take that with us as a lesson that what we shouldn't be doing. And I agree with our Alicante supporter that it's a very dangerous thing when you try to interfere with history, because history is set there, and as I just said, it's a reference point for learning and getting better. Unfortunately, sometimes, and that is true of the saying, history repeats itself, and that's what we, in the case of World War II, is that what we should be avoiding, because we all know what happened during those 6 years and the devastation they brought to the continent. So we don't want to see that again. So yes, we have to be careful, and I agree with the caller.
This one in saying what we need now are more for leaders and fewer politicians. That seems to be a general thought of most people, saying they need to be, you want clear leadership. Conservative manifesto launching at 12:30 Spanish time today. Rishi Sunak out there at Silverstone with a bunch of conservative supporters waving their signs, which is saying, what's it saying? Clear policies, bold action, etc. Clear plan, bold action, secure future.
It's a running commentary of the TV images.
I'm following this. I'm
not looking at the screen. I'm listening to you. I'm thinking, what is he doing?
Like I said before, it's the first time that Sunak has made a sort of appearance since the weekend and the D-Day debacle, I think we can call it. I'm going live to the lines. Morning caller, you're live on TRE. What's your name? Where are you calling from? What's your viewpoint, please?
It's Gil from Calpe. Since Sharon criticised me, I have to call back. I agree with her about the climate in Alicante. It is a nice place to live. I live not far. But I disagree with her about, she said about things that the populists said. Well, if somebody talks about, what if Britain would have done something, come to an agreement with Hitler, as a sort of academic discussion about what if in history, well, I don't think that's so harmful, as long as you don't say it in a way which sounds that you're supporting Hitler or anything like that. I'm not against such kind of discussions, although we can't change history, just, okay. But some of the things that some of the populists have said are maybe a little bit beyond the boundary. But there are, what is it now, 20% of Europe is populist. So some people are bound to say silly things. I mean, what about the silly things that are said on the left and all the incitement on the left? I mean, what about Yolanda Diaz saying, Palestine from the river to the sea, which implies the destruction of Israel? Nobody talks about that. I mean, on the left...
Let me just add something, Gil. Let me just add something that Yolanda Diaz said, that all the multimillionaires were building, things to go to the moon to escape the debacle of the planet.
Okay.
For a vice president of the government to say something as stupid as that. So you cannot have her as a reference of wisdom.
No, she's not a reference. She probably is not anti-Semitic. She's just an idiot, yeah?
Exactly.
But, I mean, many, many people from many parties have said lots of stupid things and also racist things and extremist things. But the minute a populist says something which could be, well, depending on how you say it, then all extremists on this far right and it's dangerous and so on and so on.
Thank you for your call in there. Going to take a quick short break and then back with more Viewpoints.
Viewpoints on Talk Radio Europe with Giles Brown.
952-78-4000. In fact, I will... Oh, hello, there we go. I'll do this.
To contact TRE, please call 952-78-4000. Email studio@tre.radio. Send us a WhatsApp on +34 645 99 67 95. Message us on Facebook, Talk Radio Europe Official, or tweet us at TRE Talk Radio.
Looking at some of the bits and pieces coming, I'll mention this manifesto that Rishi Sunak is launching at Silverstone. Manifesto week is a bit like this coming in, a bit like having your meal designed by a four-year-old. So expect Haribo, party rings and jammy dodgers. What I'm going to be looking for, though, is who's brave enough to put broccoli on the menu? Who's brave enough to include some unpopular policies as well as the sugary crowd pleasers? Because let's face it, whatever the makeup of Parliament in a month's time, the economic picture is not going to change overnight. National debt will still be cripplingly high, public services will still need more investment, and the tax burden will still be at historically high levels. Will there be a manifesto this week that addresses the scale of the challenge and that levels with voters about what it really means in terms of policy? Some more bits and pieces. Just in reply to Gil, migration is a natural effect of colonisation and war. Stop invading countries, and that will severely curb the need to migrate. As the Pope said, these countries that create war should accept refugees. Not saying the Vatican's got the outstanding record in accepting refugees. But anyway, you're shaking your head with that noise. Claudio's retired from the battle completely.
The Vatican these days is just nonsense. But I just want to pick up on what Gil said.
It's a mean steak, though.
I just want to pick up on what Gil said about Yolanda Díaz, vice president of the Spanish government. It's relevant today because she's on in all the headlines of the Spanish press because she resigned as a director of a party, but she remains the vice president of the government. But she is true what Gil said. She said the Palestine should be from the river to the sea. Let me just tell you that she's obviously so... I was going to say something stronger, but it's so ignorant that she didn't know what she was saying, because the following day when she was questioned about it, the explanation she gave was bordering the ridiculous. Simply because she didn't know the meaning of those words, she had to backtrack. But what worries me the most is that someone with that deep ignorance can be in a position of government. What she did yesterday, resigning from the party and remaining in government, is even more insulting to people, that she cannot govern her own party, but she can govern for all of the Spanish people. When you're in government, you don't govern for your own, you govern for all of us. And she's still there. She is the bordering the ridiculous, and it's insulting, I would say, that she's still there.
She's on the front cover of, she's on the front page of all the papers: El País, ABC, El Mundo, Vanguardia, La Razón. What's happening with the Catalonian then, with the ERC in respect to this? Is that breaking down as well?
That's a box of surprises.
Claudio, your thoughts on this, Claudio?
It's an absolute. Shit show, man.
Okay, you can see. I wasn't planning to say. Okay, well,
it's the only way to say it. Yeah, it's the only way to say it. Because
in which particular way is it a shit show, then, Claudia? And thank you for breaking the third wall before the fourth wall before 12 o'clock.
Just completely. I can't believe you're saying. A complete mess.
Thank you. That's the word
I'm
looking for.
It's
give
really
me some
just...
back. Give those who don't know a little bit of background, the pair of you, please, on this one.
Basically, the separatists lost their absolute majority in parliament, and Salvador Illa, who's the socialist candidate, won. So, and now today, the amnesty law has come into effect. So basically, Puigdemont has Sánchez hostage. He runs the show from completely, so they're all terrified of him. So basically, they won the socialist elections, but however, the separatists, they don't have a majority to govern, but they can control the parliament. So now that, like, the speaker of the Catalonian parliament, the separatists, they have all united, from the extreme Marxists to the conservatives to the left wing. All the three or four separatist parties have come into union, not to let a socialist
Funnily enough, the winner of the election.
The winner of the election.
Because we're getting into these... I mean, let's not forget, Sanchez never won the election.
Exactly.
And he's the Prime Minister. So we're getting into the thing of blocking those who win the election. That's a flaw that we've got in democracy, that if you go to a newly formed parliament and you get enough alliances, you can get the guy who won the elections not to... be able to, you know, govern. And this is what we fear, I hope not, but we fear is going to happen in Catalonia. Because if we leave the separatists again with their independence ideas to control that parliament, we will go back to 2017 in no time.
Completely. And Puigdemont is threatening to come back, and he says he's adamant he wants to be president of Catalonia. He says Sanchez didn't win the election and he's president. I didn't win the election, why shouldn't I be
but
president?
But is he not, I mean, he's not going to be arrested on site for, with this ad being now?
Well, that's the whole complicated.
The whole thing is that
it's very complicated.
Puigdemont, without the support of Puigdemont, Sanchez is nothing. So he has to, you know, dance his tunes, Sanchez, I mean, because otherwise he knows he's out. So he's asking and asking. I mean, the whole amnesty thing was for to secure his votes in the Spanish Parliament. Now he wants to be, although he hasn't won the election, but he wants to be president. So I wouldn't be surprised if Sanchez tells the Catalan Socialist Party, listen, help me out on this one and let him be president. And he'll come back here like if it was the reappeared Jesus, when until yesterday or today, he was wanted by the Spanish justice, and he's going to come back as a president of a region, one of the richest regions in Spain, making a mockery of the whole system. So,
and can you, I mean, can you, if Puigdemont comes back with no consequence for what happened then surely... Surely you can't. Can you trust Putin? I'm not to sort of stir up again.
He can't be trusted. And the thing is, nothing is decided yet because this amnesty needs to be applied by the judges. And Puigdemont, he's being investigated on terrorism charges by the Supreme Court. So they're the ones who will decide whether that amnesty is applicable to him or not. And they will put a prejudicial request to the European justice saying if that amnesty is in accordance with EU law, which is not, because the EU law does not allow amnesties for terrorism offences. So Puigdemont does risk... Plus, there's been another clash with the Constitutional Court because he has voted from a distance. And five days ago, the Constitutional Court said, no, to vote, you have to be present. You can't
televote
Belgium. So that possibly is suspended. So it's a complete and utter mess. And so basically anything can happen, from Puigdemont arriving and being arrested to him being president to Sanchez calling a snap election if he doesn't manage to satisfy Puigdemont's demands. Everything is open.
Yeah, because, I mean, Sanchez might be looking across the border at France and going, you know what, another snap election, why not? And here we go again, the sixth election in about 3 weeks or something like that.
He's got a problem now because he won't have the support of the group that sustains him, which is the left-wing group, Ex Podemos, now Sumar or whatever. So he can't ask for an election because then he would definitely not become the prime minister. And he has to dance around Puigdemont to maintain himself in power. And it's proved by his actions that all he wants is to remain president of the government.
At any cost. Going to the lines, just a quick one. Morning, calling you live on TRE. What's your name? Where are you calling from? What's your viewpoint, please?
Yes, Giles, I will be very quick.
Okay.
I just want a right of reply to Gil, please.
Of course,
I know
of
it's
you
not
can,
what
Sharon.
You're talking about.
It's all right.
Very quick.
All right.
Okay.
Go ahead, Sharon.
Right, okay. It's okay to say, it's not okay to say from the river to the sea, but it is okay to say we should have done a deal with Hitler. That's all I'm saying.
Thank you.
It's an unbalanced argument. Thank you.
Thank you, Sharon. Bye-bye. There we go. So, into the last 5 minutes of this morning's Viewpoint. If you want to get your comments in, then these are the numbers.
To contact TRE, please call 952-78-4000. Email studio@tre.radio.
send us a WhatsApp on +34 645 99 67 95. Message us on Facebook, Talk Radio Europe Official, or tweet us at TRE Talk Radio.
And thank you for the WhatsApp in from Max, who on Claudio saying it's a shot show, not the actual words, saying it's a shot show. He said, are you referring to the pavements and the dog poo again? So therefore, good show. Thank you, Max. Well done, indeed. You see, that's what I like about our listeners. They can they sometimes, in the style of Al Cavallo, whatever his name is, they can do a sizzling backhand down the line.
Yeah.
Right. We've got 4 and a bit minutes. Off you go.
You do one. One thing. Claudio mentioned these Puigdemont ones. Terrorism. I don't like the guy. I'm not supporting anything, but I cannot see terrorism on what he did. Obviously, the judge will have to decide that, and I'm not a judge, and anything near a judge, but I cannot see it. I think that's stretching too much, not wanting, wanting the guy in jail.
Yeah.
I don't particularly want to see him in jail. There's no use.
You create a political martyr, don't you?
None of them. I didn't want to see them in jail. I just don't want them in public institutions running the country because they are useless. So let's ban them from being in public office. That's all they need to do. All this jail business and everything is just inflating their supporters with anger. And all you need to do is just say, look, you've done wrong, you've gone against the law, we won't allow you to run for office, and that's your punishment for what you did. For me, that would be enough. And stretching the thing about terrorism and here and there, yeah, I know there was a lot of violence at one point with the protest.
Yeah, but it's sedition, right? That's sedition rather than saying it's holding a legal referendum.
You were seeing images on the screen just now of hooligans in a football match, which is
how dare you talk about the Conservative Manifesto in that way?
We saw in Barcelona in those days.
No.
It was more of that rather than it's called terrorism. That's stretching it a little bit too much. So, as I say, I'm not defending Puigdemont, but we have to be realistic and get do things that they are useful. And the most useful thing to do is, and that's within the law, is to inhabilitate someone to take public office. And I think that's the route that we should be taking, and just get rid of them and let them go and work in a petrol station.
Let them go.
Or a bakery. It doesn't matter. Just get out of public office.
Pan de Puigdemont. I can see it now. Panerie de Puigdemont.
Yeah. Yeah, I think the family used to run a bakery.
There's a joke in there somewhere. I'm just trying to think of it, but anyway, listen, we are short running out of time. Just a quick one, because we probably won't be back. I probably won't have to see you two esteemed guests on of panel. Cast your eyes to the UK elections just quickly. I mean, we're just saying, have you ever seen a campaign that's been run so chaotically as the Conservatives ones? Claudia, when we convene again, do you think the UK will have a Labour government?
Can you repeat the question? When we
get back together again, i.e. when you're back on the show, do you think Conservatives will still be in power in the UK?
Probably not.
Right.
Especially, it's 14 years, so it's a chapter that's closed. It's like in Germany with Angela Merkel,
yeah,
who had a very long premiership also. So I think it comes to a point where they just can't stretch it any longer of thing. It's just like end of an era.
It will definitely be a Labour government, exactly. I think. The Conservative Party is completely destroyed. You can only have one man to blame, the chaotic leader of Boris Johnson, who destroyed the party. There is no team around Sunak. If you compare the Margaret Thatcher and Rishi Sunak in terms of their team, I could name a lot of the ministers of those days.
Yeah.
I cannot name one minister of Rishi Sunak, can you? The guy, Jeremy Hunt? Is he Jeremy Hunt?
That's the Chancellor, yes, but well done.
You've got
left and Gonzuela.
I like that. Yeah. Oh my goodness.
You have a strong team behind you to be able to move forward.
Well, I've had a strong team behind me today because we're almost out of time. Thanks very much to my panel. Claudio Della Torre.
Thank you, everyone, for listening.
Yes, indeed, and breaking the fourth wall with the Shot Show, and also Andres Gallardo.
As always, Giles, thank you very much.
This show will be repeated at 7 o'clock. Stephen Ritson and Europe Today is up next. Thanks very much. I'll see you tomorrow for Let's Talk at 10.
Views expressed on Viewpoint by invited studio guests and callers do not constitute an opinion endorsed in any way by Talk Radio Europe.
You've been listening to a TRE production. If you've enjoyed this program, there'll be another episode waiting for you next week, right here on this platform, where you can also access our extensive back catalogue of shows and interviews. For more information on our live programming, social media channels and apps, and how to contact Talk Radio Europe, please visit tre.radio.